Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Well, the holidays are over. Let the splits begin. According to my guest, Nicole Noonan, a nationally recognized divorce expert, a lot of folks untie the knot in January, making it in the U.S. the unofficial divorce month. And I trust you and your spouse are not contemplating divorce, but if so, Nicole is here to offer suggestions to speed the process, ease the pain, and ensure a fair and equitable settlement for both parties. And Nicole Noonan is CEO of Navatus U.S., a highly unique firm providing financing to help litigants fund costs of obtaining a divorce. And she's a former matrimonial attorney who is now an advocate for protection of women and their rights. And she was recognized by New York Magazine as New York's Woman Leader in the Law 2014. And she's been featured on Good Morning America, Bloomberg TV, and other TV stations. And hello, Nicole. It's indeed an honor to have you with us here today.
Oh, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, to begin, why is January considered the best time to end a bad marriage? Is there any good reason for that?
Well, I think, you know, the main reason is in January, the holidays are over. So you've made it through. If you have children, you're not upsetting them or upsetting your family and friends. Yeah. However, it is a lot of together time during the holidays. So it really brings to light perhaps the desire
Hubby or our wife are both home from work and at each other's throats.
Exactly. It's a lot of togetherness, which is not always a good thing. So.
Yeah, that's true. What are some of the most common and important issues that are facing divorcing women today?
I think knowledge for both men and women is really key when going through a divorce. That is so important. I have clients that come to me all the time that are not aware of what their assets and liabilities are. And so I think the main thing is to really know what you have and what you owe. Gathering important papers and documents, whether it be your lease to your apartment or your mortgage statements, credit card statements, those things. You should really be aware of what you have and what you don't have.
Yeah, and that's sometimes emotions are flying high and you're really bitter. You want to get at the other spouse, and it's probably pretty tough, especially if you have a bunch of joint assets to work that out together, I would think.
Absolutely. You can't, don't throw good money after bad when it comes to a divorce. It's difficult, but it's important to keep your emotions in check.
The
time to really, it's not always easy. It's easier said than done, unfortunately.
Well, what are some of the basic rights of a divorcing woman that her attorney should seek to protect? I know there's a lot of them, and for men as well, but...
Well, I think it goes for both men and women that they should seek to protect their rights to what they're entitled to financially, and then to let them know that they would be able to get emotional support, whether it be through a therapist for an attorney to have on hand. I always think it's a good idea. 5 great therapists, whether it's for their client or their client's children, to know that the help is available for them and to not be afraid of asking for help.
No, that's for sure. And it's so important that you untangle those things, because I know a lady who divorced, and then months later she got the IRS freezing and holding some of her assets for bills that her ex-husband had run up, but they were jointly in her name. So there's all kinds of messy things like that show up well after the divorce that you have to be careful of, I guess.
Right. The longer the marriage, the more difficult it can be when it comes to things like that?
Well, no matter how difficult the circumstances, abusive wife, infidelity, whatever, I presume it's always best to seek a settlement that's fair to both parties that will allow both the ex-husband and ex-wife to move on. Any advice on how to keep the emotions in check so they don't cloud your judgment? I mean, I know you said we should do that, but how do you do that?
Well, again, it's easier said than done. When it comes to, you know, really discussing with your spouse, realize that if you have children, that this is the parent of your children, that even though you may be divorcing your spouse, your children are not divorcing your spouse. So when it comes to making arrangements, parenting time, it's really important that you recognize that. And to realize that to be fair is really key. Because if you end up going to court, it's a court of equity. So everything is divided very fairly. It's not, someone's not going to get a windfall just because you believe they're a bad person and they cheated on you. It doesn't mean you're going to get full custody just because someone may have had a slip up.
I think it was on your website. I saw somebody put it that the court is going to decide the finances. It's not going to decide the emotions.
That's absolutely, absolutely true. Yeah. So, you know, they're going to take a blind eye to whether or not there was infidelity. They're just going to say, you're entitled to X, you're entitled to Y, and have a good day. So.
And the kids are going X or Y. Well, if you're a wife ready to file or contemplating divorce, what's the best way to locate a husband, what's the best way to locate a highly competent divorce attorney in your area? And what are some important qualifications? And beyond his or her fees, what questions should you ask to determine if the attorney is the right one for you?
So I think it's a lot of people go and ask friends, family members that have gone through divorces or have contemplated going through divorces, who they have used. Certainly, there are great websites out there that list very competent attorneys that are members of very prestigious groups, such as the American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers or the International Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers, and that's always a good resource. But the most important thing is that it's a good fit for you. You're going to be spending a lot of time with this person. So who may have been a good fit for your cousin going through a divorce may not be a good fit for you.
It's like your doctor. You have to find an attorney that you're comfortable with and you know is on your side, but is not pulling the wool over your eyes or trying to get off easy.
Absolutely.
Let you know in advance what your prospects are.
Right.
Whitewashing them, but... Well, so many couples at middle age have commingled assets, you know, joint bank accounts, investments, co-ownership of house and cars. Is there a good way to resolve financial issues without defaulting to the court and for time-consuming and costly litigation? What are some options on that?
What is always a terrific idea, if it can be done, and unfortunately for a lot of couples it cannot be, to sit down with your spouse. And just hash out as many things as you can. What are your, you know, sticking points? What are his sticking points? And then try to come to a compromise there. It's not always easy, but if you can do it, it's definitely a financial benefit for you as a couple, and not just for you, but for your children, because that's money that you could be used for their education. You know, there's a line that a lot of divorce attorneys know. You can either put my children through as a divorce attorney through college, or you can put your own children through college because it is so expensive.
Yeah.
So just bear in mind.
I think somewhere I saw the possibility of mitigation. Isn't there some kind of a mitigation process you can go through that, like get an arbiter or something to decide how the assets should be divided?
There is. So mediation is another great option for couples where they can go meet with a mediator either with an attorney or without, and they can run through it, basically helping them do, if they can't do that by themselves, where they go through what the assets are, what are your absolute sticking points, or you need to, whether it's an antique vase that your grandmother gave you that's you want it now part of your equitable distribution, or whether it's a car that is really your sticking point. You have to be fair, and with a mediator, they can help do that if you can't do that on your own.
Well, the mediator and most of these mediation type situations, do they leave it so that the arbitrator's decision is binding, or do they both sides agree to that in advance, or do they just make a recommendation, or what is the process like?
It's very different state by state. So you have places where mediation is becoming very popular, arbitration is very popular, and other states where it's not. You can certainly, in some states, sign up and do a binding arbitration where once you get that agreement, then you'll put it through. And the same thing with a mediator. Once you come to an agreement, an attorney would then, you could either have an attorney review it, but an attorney would then put it through.
Well, in modern times, the wife often earns more than her husband. Is it common these days for a wife to be ordered to pay alimony or perhaps even child support to ex-husbands? Is that common these days?
Well, you know, it's definitely times are changing, and women are often, I see a lot of it in Manhattan, where the women are the breadwinners and the husbands are the stay-at-home dads, which is great. And, of course, if they're, it's again, it's state by state. You know, some states' alimony rules are very, very different than others. If you're entitled to alimony, you have to look at it as a non-moneyed spouse. If you're the moneyed spouse, your non-moneyed spouse will then be entitled to perhaps an amount of alimony, gender aside.
Yeah. Well, I know there are a number of common lingering issues that ex-husbands and ex-wives need to avoid. And what, for instance, can an ex-wife, or that matter, an ex-husband do if her ex is ordered to pay either alimony or child support or both and consistently pays late or stops sending out alimony checks altogether? Are there remedies available? I knew a lady in Michigan who had a settlement and never got a dime out of the supposed party that was supposed to pay the settlement. So is it easy to get that enforced if you're not getting what you the court said you're supposed to get?
Right. Well, it depends on the state, but it's definitely not something a court looks lightly upon. I mean, certainly, if you're supposed to be paying child support and you haven't been making your child support payments, there's a term that in the courthouse they call payer stays. So you can bring your non-paying spouse to court. If they do not make those child support payments, a tough judge will throw that person in jail. Bring your toothbrush. So hopefully it doesn't get to that level, but that's certainly something that does happen from time to time, and you have to look if someone's really sort of thumbing their nose up at the court, then you'll have to take them back and say, you're entitled to child support, you're entitled to your alimony payments, and they haven't been forthcoming. So it's time to go back to court, unfortunately.
That's most unfortunate when you've already gone through the complicated process of divorce and then you have to go back because you're not getting what the court ordered you to get. It can be a real pain in the rear, say the
least. Right.
Well, let's talk a bit about the services your firm provides. What is a common financing problem facing the individuals, especially non-moneyed women, contemplating divorce? I know I've known people that have gone through that. They want a divorce, but they don't have the funds up front. Is that a fairly common situation?
It is. It's definitely something that I saw firsthand in my practice, where our clients would be asset rich and cash poor. So their assets are all tied up in a house.
Yeah.
And in certain states, your assets are frozen during the time of a divorce. And if you are the non-moneyed spouse, your moneyed spouse can then go off and hire a great attorney, where you're left with asking friends and family or trying to take out a credit card. And if you don't have great credit, that's a problem. Yeah. And if you don't have friends and family, and it's an embarrassing, it's a sticky situation. A lot of people, it's very taboo for them to ask their parents or even their children for money so they could divorce.
Yeah,
so
Novatus USA make or U.S. make loan to divorcing spouse, or how does that work?
It's a non-recourse cash advance for an individual going through a divorce. So what we do is we fund their legal fees, their expert costs, and from time to time their living expenses.
Well, who is eligible for a divorce funding advance? How do you go about checking into that. I guess you have to have filed for divorce, or you plan to, or how does that work?
Right. Well, the number one for us is that you have to be represented by an attorney. We can't take on pro se or self-representing litigants.
I can't represent myself.
And ask for legal fees. Unfortunately, no. Unfortunately, no. But other than that, we look at their total marital. Once they come to us through their attorney, we look at their total marital asset pool. And then we determine what she or he is entitled to and then fund a percentage of that.
Now, what can the money that you advance be used for? Is there a restriction on that, or how is that controlled?
Well, it's mainly for legal fees and then for expert costs. When it comes to experts, it can be a forensic accountant that can actually go in and look for hidden assets, which happens from time to time. That bank account in Switzerland all of a sudden crops up when you have a forensic accountant finding it, because otherwise you may not be able to find the extra $30,000 or $30 million that's lying around. But that doesn't always happen. Or private investigators or therapists, individuals that help your divorce team, really, other than your lawyer. And then from time to time, we do living expenses for clients that have a certain lifestyle.
Yeah.
That when it's divorcing, then they're only getting a certain interim award until they get to their settlement. So for a lot of women and men, they have to, if they haven't worked in many years, to supplement that their income that they're looking for, a amount of assets that will then fund.
Well, I presume you charge interest on the advance, and which is expected. But do I have to pay any of the money prior to my divorce settlement? Do I have to come up with installment payments or anything like that?
No. There's no payments until settlement. There's a fee, but just it's rolled into what you're funded, and that comes out at settlement. So it really takes, for a lot of clients, the headache out of worrying about how they're going to pay for their legal fees.
If the ultimate divorce settlement is not enough, it turns out, to fully pay for the repay for the amount that was previously forwarded? Both you and the experts underestimated or overestimated what they'd get in the settlement. Will I be responsible to pay Navitas the difference?
That really would fall on our issue, because that means we didn't do our underwriting properly. So we're very conservative, and we cherry pick the clients, so we make sure that they're a good fit. And once they do the determination on that, we go ahead and start the funding. So hopefully that won't happen.
Well, what if someone who received a Novitas advance needs more money than initially anticipated? Can additional funds be made available, or how does that work?
So once we determine what they're entitled to for funding, we do the maximum. They may not need that whole amount. If they have already been approved for that amount, then they certainly can take it out if they haven't taken out the full amount. But typically, we don't fund over a certain percentage of what they're entitled to.
Yeah. So if you figure you'll need this X amount of dollars over the settlement, but you only need Y amount now, you would encourage people not to take out the extra right away, I guess. Cause obviously,
you might
be tempted to spend it on something.
Exactly. It's not the time to go out and have a crazy shopping spree or that around-the-world trip. It's probably best to be a little more conservative.
Well, now, let's say that I have an attorney. Should I then contact you directly, or how does that work? Or do I have my attorney contact you, or...
Typically, we speak with the attorneys. From time to time, a client does have questions, and someone, either myself or someone in my office, are happy to answer those questions. And, that's pretty much how we operate.
If my attorney or my wife's, whoever it is, has never heard of, is unaware of your services, they can easily contact you, I guess, and get all the details.
Our website, there is our FAQs are up on our website, as well as I'm happy if... Email me questions. I'm also happy to send out brochures to law firms as well as clients.
I see. Yeah, I found that FAQ section on your website was excellent. It answered a lot of questions I had, and there was also a section for attorneys. So I guess that's – and give us that website again.
Sure.
Where people should go to learn
more. It's www.novitasus.com. So Novitas.com.
That was fascinating because I had never heard of a service like that, and it sounds like such a logical place to go if you're, like you say, you're cash poor but rich in potential settlement. In conclusion, divorce is never an easy settlement to talk about, but let's face it, if you're in an abusive relationship, physically or emotionally, either for yourself or for your children or for both, or if you and your spouse or one or the other or both of you are convinced beyond a doubt that you don't wish to spend the rest of your lives together, then right now in January may be the best time to make a break. And like me, I bet you've known unhappy individuals, especially wives, who have stayed in a rotten marriage simply because they didn't have liquid funds available to pay for the divorce. They may be sitting on a potential gold mine, a very generous settlement, but were too cash poor to mine the gold. If that is your situation, you put divorce off long enough, and I urge you to go to Nicole Newman's website, www.novitasus.com, and she spelled it for you before, and research that potential funding resource. And her site, believe me, contains straightforward, frequently asked questions for clients that you can download if you want, or you can read them right online, and they'll answer most of the questions that you have. Plus, there's a way to contact them directly if you need to. And if, in closing, I'm not urging anyone to run out and file for divorce, but please be realistic. If you've exhausted all your realistic options for staying together, then January may be the month of new beginnings. So please, even if you need to learn out, if you need to start over, there's no reason to postpone it, because you have to ensure that middle age is your best age, and that may be starting all over again with someone else or getting out of an abusive relationship. And thank you so much, Nicole Newman, Noonan, for introducing us to this funding option.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And I hope we send a lot of people to your website to learn more about it, because I don't want anyone to be stuck just because they're cash poor right now. Thank
you so
much, Nicole.
You're welcome.
Let's face it, for more than a few couples this year, they will get divorced. And as we continue on the subject, let's turn to one of the messiest aspects of divorce, and that's finances. And regardless of economic or social status, the financial implications of a marriage breakup can be severe with or without children. And what you don't need is a bitter, drawn-out battle over what belongs to who. And especially if the two of you have always commingled funds and your primary assets are in both your names, not to mention the contentious issues of alimony and child support. And my next guest, Patricia Davis, is here to discuss how money and emotion mingle when couples split and how money issues impact the breakup. Wouldn't it be great if the two of you could resolve significant financial issues without turning it over to the court to decide? And who knows who wins in that case? She's also here for those of you widowed or divorced, maybe always single, who are contemplating getting married, maybe for the first time or for the second, third time, and what are some money issues you should resolve with your partner before getting hitched up. And Patricia Davis is Managing Director of Davis Financial Services in Mitchellville, Maryland, and she's also Executive Director of Money Matters, Inc. nonprofit. She's a seasoned former financial finance executive with several Fortune 500 corporations. She teaches and advises individuals and couples nationwide about the laws and realities of the money game, and she's author whose latest book is especially relevant to many of us at middle age, Money Secrets for the Sandwich Generation, Squeezed in the Financial Middle. And hello, Patricia. We're honored to have you here to talk about divorce, love, and money.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's first talk about divorce and start from the beginning. From your experience, can a marriage survive when there's a great disparity in earned income? After all, that's the traditional model of the husband breadwinner and the wife a stay-at-home mom.
A lot of that has changed. It can survive as long as the higher earning spouse doesn't use the fact that that person earns more money as part of a power play.
Yeah, that's for sure, especially when if, say, one of the spouses doesn't work but raises the kids and has all kinds of domestic or whatever you want to call them responsibilities that they're not getting paid for.
Absolutely. Things have changed today, though. That used to be the man who was the higher-earning spouse and the woman who stayed at home or
yes,
didn't or worked in a lower-paying job. But today
yeah.
you're finding women are out-earning men. But as long as they have an understanding of where the boundaries are, I think it certainly they certainly can survive with
yeah, and we men have to. I think sometimes men resent if they're or if they could be resentful if their spouses are earning more. I think maybe it's more touchy for us to adapt to that modern society. I don't know. Maybe it's just me.
No, I think that's true. That's been what's gone on historically. But the other issue is how you handle those finances. If money is put together, if you sit down and have some conversations before the marriage, that's especially important. But even
yeah.
after the marriage, you talk
yeah.
about how that money will be spent. I don't think you have to have that conflict.
No. Well, does one sex generally fare better than the other in a divorce? And if so, which one and why?
Well, statistics show that both fare equally badly in a divorce, especially if they're children.
Yeah.
In the case of a divorce, I think statistics show that two really cannot live more cheaply than one if they're living separately because each
has to have...
No, of
course, yeah, you have separate households and separate
right.
TVs and separate laundry, washer
right.
and dryer,
right.
and separate
right.
this and that. It's obviously going to cost more.
Everything is double. You've got utilities that are double. You've got, even if you used to have two cars, you've now got separate insurances.
Yeah.
Both people can fare pretty badly. And one of
yeah.
the things that we often suggest to people is that before the divorce, you sit down with a financial person and
yeah.
find out what your needs will be to ensure that as you go through that painful process, your needs are met.
Yeah, that's so important to, and of course, sometimes divorces come up overnight. Sometimes maybe it's been a long time coming, but so I don't know how much time you're going to have to get that. But it's so essential that you get that financial advice so that you're not, so the finances don't get buried in with all the other emergency type issues that are arising. But,
and you're not giving away the store, either of you, not. The man or the woman, but both of you have to understand what your assets are and make sure you're not just ending up with something that you may feel emotionally attached to. And let me
yeah.
give you an example, a house.
Yeah.
You may
yeah.
find that one person says, I want the house.
Yeah.
Well, don't forget the house has a mortgage on it.
Yeah, that's true.
Along with the house comes paying for the house. On the
yeah.
other hand, one may say, I want the house and the house is paid for. What you've done is given that person a fully paid-for asset.
Yeah.
You then have to go out and find somewhere to live that you have to pay for.
Yeah.
So you want to
true.
Make sure you've listed all of your assets and all of your liabilities, and you're drawing some lines that make the split as even as possible.
Yeah, that's so interesting. In a house where there's a joint mortgage and... I would think that would be very complicated to work out if one wants to stay in the house, but certainly the other one doesn't have to and doesn't want to continue paying a mortgage where they're not living. So that would, I would think, create a lot of complications that need to be resolved.
Right. And very often people think, well, after the divorce, I'll just get my name taken off the house. The financial institution doesn't absolve you of your financial responsibility just because your relationship issue
yeah.
got turned upside down.
Yeah,
so you don't just walk away from it and say, I'm divorced, she's in the house, I don't have to pay for it anymore. Yes, you do.
Well,
unless that person refinances the house and gets your name off of it and refinances it in their own name.
Yeah, that's so crucial. It gets complicated.
It gets real complicated.
These emotional bitterness issues to deal with and then to work out something that's fair for both parties when you're really bitter toward your ex-spouse. It can be a real problem. But
yes, and people don't want to talk. They're not amenable to sitting down and having quiet conversations. And in some cases, that's what caused the divorce in the first place.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
No surprise that they can't stop and do it then.
And they may even be separated for some time before the divorce and not even communicating at all. So it's
right.
Well, let's say a marriage is in serious trouble and you're contemplating splitting up. Why is financial education so important to someone contemplating a divorce? I guess we've sort of covered that, but
we touched on that because at the time of a divorce, and even before, you need to fully understand your finances, both
yeah.
sides, so
yeah.
that you ensure that you get a settlement that's fair and equitable. You want to make sure you get this financial counseling before the divorce so that you don't end up on the losing side.
Well, where should you go to obtain that education? Do you need a financial advisor in addition to a good divorce attorney, or do sometimes the divorce attorneys handle finances as well?
Well, look at it this way. When you want your hair cut, you go to a barber.
Yeah.
You want your nails done, you go to a beauty salon. If you want financial advice, you don't ask the mailman. You don't
yeah.
ask your sister-in-law. You don't ask the divorce attorney any more than you would ask the financial advisor about divorce.
Yeah.
So, yes, you find a financial advisor who you can trust, and not
yeah.
somebody who's trying to sell you something, but somebody
yeah.
who's trying to advise you on the way to look at your assets and your liabilities
yeah.
and what your future earning potential is and all of that. So all
yeah.
of those things come into play.
Yeah, in most communities, are there competent financial advisors who specialize in the finances of divorces, or are they mostly general practitioners? Where do you find one that's especially good at divorce actions?
Wow. I know how to tell you how to find a financial advisor, but there may be specifics. There's a registry of financial advisors. You may even Google financial advisors hyphen divorce
yeah.
specialist or something like that. But
yeah, that's it.
I'm afraid that's one that I don't know the answer to, and
yeah,
I will
I'm
always
sure
tell you if I don't
is.
Know the answer.
Well, from a couple that has a joint checking account and other than IRAs and 401Ks, their investment and savings are all commingled, and homes and cars are in both names. And like you say, they're separating husband and wife aren't speaking. From your experience, confusing couples sometimes resolve the finances without turning to court, and how do they accomplish it? Do both need a financial advisor, or how do you go about, you know, resolving that when you really don't want to talk to the person you're divorcing?
They both need financial advisors. If they're so bitter that they don't want to talk to each other, each probably thinks the other is out to get them.
Yeah.
So it might be difficult. You have to have some kind of court proceeding to make the divorce final. But my advice would be to have separate financial advisors who can talk to each other.
Yeah.
You still have divorce attorneys representing you who
yeah.
then present your case.
Yeah, it's so crucial to just sit back on your own and figure out just what you need and, you know,
yes.
what you consider your assets versus or how you would split up assets in both names. All those kind of things can be done, hopefully, on a win-win basis, even if there is bitterness, if you get the right people involved. But I would think it would
yes.
be a real somebody can really suffer if there isn't
I agree. And you need the financial advisor because there are things that people don't think of who are not accustomed to dealing with finances. There are pensions out
yeah.
there. There
yeah.
are, as you said, 401Ks and IRAs. There's Social
yeah.
Security benefits. There
yeah.
are all sorts of things that the everyday person who may have a totally different feel just does not think about when they sit down to think about
yeah.
what assets do we have. Well, oh, my goodness. He does get a pension.
Yeah.
And we've been married for 26 years. Don't I
yeah.
get part of that pension?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
it's, and she's got stock options and all sorts of things. So
yeah.
there's a lot to think about.
No, it's why it's so important to have an advisor to help out, because I sure wouldn't want to. Fortunately, I've never gone through a divorce, but doing that without help just seems very frightening.
It's pretty scary, isn't it?
Well, let's turn on a more positive note and talk about those not yet hitched, presently widowed or divorced or maybe seriously thinking about getting married again. Why is it so important that couples talk about their individual financial values before they tie the knot?
You talk about it before you tie the knot to ensure that you're on the same page, that you have similar financial values, similar values of right and wrong when it comes to just how you treat each other, honesty and all of that. And it's important to make sure, like I said, that you're on the same page.
Yeah.
I tell people, and they laugh, but I tell people you should exchange FICO scores before you exchange wedding vows.
Yeah.
You
need to know something.
Huh?
How in the heck are you supposed to ask your boyfriend or girlfriend, maybe fiancé, to reveal their credit scores without offending them and causing a breakup? What's a good way to ease into a discussion of finances, you know, which I think would be a touchy subject if not handled
well,
right?
You tell them that this is very important that we both know, that we both be honest in our financial life.
Yeah.
And you say something like, I'm more than willing to tell you about mine, and I'd like to tell you to tell me about yours. I mean, you can't ask them to give you information you're not willing to give them.
No, that's for sure.
So,
what's your FICO score? And the other one says, well, mine's higher than yours.
Okay. Okay. But there has been so much financial dishonesty that people have uncovered after they got married. And if you had that information and could see that credit report, I tell people there's a big difference in marrying somebody who has $100,000 in student loans than somebody who's got $100,000 in debt to Penny's and Macy's and Sears and has just been buying stuff.
Yeah.
In one case, the person is somewhat irresponsible. In the other case, you understand, some people call it good debt when you have debt to student loans. But even at that, you want to make sure. You want to make sure you know what they have. I just encountered a guy who found out after he got married that his wife owed $30,000 to the IRS and $15,000 to the state.
Yeah.
Another lady found out her new husband had a child support order that she didn't know about.
Yeah.
So people find out all sorts of things.
No, you know, when you're trying to attract somebody of the opposite sex and you know, entering a relationship, you don't really want to ask them the difficult questions. But as you point out, it's so essential that you do one way or another. You need to get to the bottom of what your future spouse's financial habits are going to be and whether they're similar to your own thoughts.
Right, right. You think about an alcoholic and a teetotaler.
Yeah.
They are not likely to mesh.
Yeah.
So you need to know if you've got a saver who's trying to get hooked up with a spender.
Yeah.
That's going to be difficult.
Yeah.
That's going to be difficult.
Yeah, but I guess two people with very different financial values and spending habits can coexist, but they have to have an understanding, I would think, in advance, and there have to be limits in terms of what the spender is going to spend. I don't know, you know, how they work it out, but I suppose there are a few couples with successful marriages who have very different finances, but not very many.
I was going to say it's not likely. I just talked to a guy who had been honest with another financial reporter, and she wrote an article entitled 400 Pairs of Shoes. He was getting married, and his fiance had 400-plus pairs of shoes, and he wanted to know whether he should marry her. Her spending habits were, he thought, somewhat out of control.
Yeah,
he chose to marry her anyway. Oh. It is now 10 years later, and it looks like the divorce is probably imminent.
Oh, great. Well,
those
10 years is better than I would have expected.
Well, a child got introduced into the mix.
Oh, great. That's what I
mean. And he said he's now trying to hold on to his house.
Oh.
Things have gotten pretty bad, but he didn't see the signs.
No,
he saw the signs, but he didn't believe the signs, I guess.
Yeah.
And there was a commitment to change, but it didn't happen.
You know, it's not just the finances. It's really, if you're marrying someone that has very different outlook on debt and on finances and everything like that, it's likely that their entire outlook on life is probably not that similar to yours.
Right.
It's not likely, I wouldn't think, to work out. Well, on an unrelated subject, you've written a book on a subject of great concern to many of us at middle age, and that's raising our children at the same time we help support an aging, depending parent or grandparent. Let's talk briefly about your 2014 book, Money Secrets for the Sandwich Generation. We don't have time to get into detail, but can you give us one or two steps that we can take to help ease the financial strain and our sense of bewilderment if we're trying to do that?
One of the big things, and I'm going through it with a family member now, is before they get to the point of some signs of slowing down, mentally especially, you want to get information from them.
Yeah.
Information about their own financial life, so that you can help them when they can't help themselves, so that you can know what to look for. In one case, we're looking for a bank account that we know is out there somewhere, and we don't have any way of finding it. But
so frustrating to have a person that no longer has all their faculties that has some hidden assets like that you're trying to find. I just think that would be a nightmare.
So one of the ideas is to sit down with your parent or grandparent or whoever it is in advance and say, I'm not really trying to manage your life, but I want to make sure we can do it when you can, and ask for PIN numbers to accounts. You want account information. You want passwords. You want all of that information so that you can take care of their business or help take care of their business.
Yeah,
but so many people today have parents who are outliving their assets. They have adult children who can't find jobs, who are back home, or they sign for student loans. So they are squeezed in the financial world.
No, that's for sure. Well, where can we go to preview and purchase Money Secrets for the Sandwich Generation? I was going to say, you also have a highly acclaimed money management book, Mimi, Money, and Me, 101 Realities About Money Daddy Never Taught Me, But My Mama Always Know.
That's right. Mimi was my mother, young widow with five children who made us learn the rules of money. So I'm sharing some of those points with the world and things I've heard as I've traveled the country listening to people's myths about money.
So
they're
where
both
should we
available
go to preview
on my
those?
Website.
Oh, I see. And what is that website?
www.yourmoneywiz.com. YourMoneyWiz.com.
Yeah, that's a neat website that you can remember, like
Your
the show
Money
Wiz. Your Money Wiz.
That's Patricia Davis.
Do you serve clients nationwide in terms of counseling, or how would they get in touch with you?
They can go to my website, or they can send me an email at info@yourmoneywiz.com.
Oh, I see. Get in touch with you. Well, in conclusion, at middle age or any age, divorce is not a pleasant subject, but it's reality, with around 50% of all marriages ending in divorce. And I trust your marriage is not on the fault line. But if it
is not on the fault line. I will celebrate 49 years of it in 2 months.
No, I wasn't talking to you personally. I was talking to the people out there.
Oh, I thought you said you're meaning me.
No. If it is, I urge you to work out the finances coolly and rationally, and if possible, as a win-win proposition. Certainly, you need to take care of yourself, but, you know, this person that you're divorcing is someone you maybe had a family with and have been married to and had once loved a lot, and you don't want that person to suffer the rest of their life any more than you want to. So you need to add financial hardship to the you don't need to add that to the emotional trauma you and your soon-to-be ex-spouse and your offspring, of course, are going through. And if needed, don't forget the services of our guest, Patricia Davis, and her firm, Davis Financial Services, at yourmoneywiz.com. And thank you so much, Patricia, for joining us, and best of success with your two books.
Thank you, and thank you for having me.
And let's all go out there and not get divorced this our primary resolutions for 2016, but if we are, watch those finances. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.